This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hi, everybody. Terry Braverman back with Sports Talk 870. Filling in, I guess, for the in the old chair of Earl Robinson. It's day number three for this old-timer. Aaron is our engineer across the glass. And Aaron, I have to ask you a question before we start. And we're going to talk all about all the things you don't want to hear about the Spartans losing to Indiana. No real disgrace since they were number one in the nation. But Aaron, do you ever read your horoscope?
No, I do not. Oh, everyone's in a great one.
Well, let me read you mine today, because here I am about to do an hour's worth of talk radio, okay? Mine says, there's power inside your vocal cords. Slow, deliberate, confident speech will clinch a deal. A few words are enough to convey your strength, whereas over-talking would indicate weakness. So here I am doing a talk show, and I'm not supposed to over-talk.
Well, I'm not sure how you're going to plan that one out today.
I'll just ask a lot of questions and let my guests do the rest. We're going to have two guests in the hour. The first is a coordinator for the IZONE, the marvelous student group around the Breslin Center for Men's Basketball. And then later on, we're going to have Lisa Byington, who graduated from local television to the Big Ten Network. She's on a conference call now, but she agreed to join us a little later. But all right, let's get to it. Last night, it was a magic event, number one versus number four, and the Irvin Johnson was on hand with Dick Vitale, Mike Tirico, and a whole lot of celebrities. And the game, actually, I suppose, if you didn't care who won, if you didn't care, probably was quite entertaining. But most of the 14,457 did care, and they didn't like the final, 72-68 Indiana. I'll give you some stats. And I'll give you some quotes from the coaches, both IZONE and Crean, after the game. But for Indiana, you look at a balanced attack on this club. Their starting guard, Jordan Hulls, 12 points. Christian Watford, 12 points. Yogi Ferrell had 6. He was the only starter under double figures. Cody Zeller, the outstanding 7-foot center, 17 points. And Victor Oladipo, the player of the year, without a doubt, 19 points. Player of the year, not only in the Big Ten, maybe in the country. He was sensational and not playing at full strength. He said 80 to 85%. He made a couple of great plays down the stretch for Indiana that really won them the ball game. By the way, Yogi Ferrell, who was 3 for 9, the other guard, also had 5 assists for the Hoosiers. And for Michigan State, the stat line, a little interesting. Adrian Payne had a great line if you go all the way across. Adrian was 6 for 8 in field goals, 3 for 3 from three-point range, 2 for 2 at the free throw line, had 7 rebounds, 4 fouls, so he had to sit. He played 25 minutes, scored 17 points. He had 2 blocks, 1 assist, no turnovers. A great line for AP. Now, on the reverse side, Keith Appling had not a good night. He was 1 for 8 in field goals, 0 for 4 from three-point range, 4 out of 7 at the free throw line, had 3 rebounds, 1 foul, 6 points, 2 assists, 4 turnovers, 1 steal, played 36 minutes. I know Keith is not going to be happy with that performance. Gary Harris, the freshman, 6 out of 13 from the field, 1 for 5 three-point range, 6 out of 9 at the free throw line, and he missed the front end of a 3 free throw attempt that would have, if he makes all 3, tied the game with 20 seconds to play. Ended up with 19 points, however. He had 21 against Indiana at Bloomington, so Gary has 40 points in 2 games against the number one team in the country. Played 35 minutes, and he was hurting in the second half. I think the very first minute of the second half, he got bumped and tweaked that left shoulder, and he was wincing in pain. Played right through it. Brandon Dawson did not have a good night. Played 23 minutes. He was 4 out of 8 from the field. Did not attempt a 3-pointer. Did not go to the free throw line. Had 4 rebounds, 2 fouls, total of 8 points, and 3 turnovers in those 23 minutes. Derek Nix had an outstanding second half. He was 4 out of 8 from the field. He had 5 rebounds, a total of 8 points, 3 assists, only one turnover and played 32 minutes. Nix was a beast down the stretch and kept the Spartans in the game. Gauna came off the bench, scored a couple of points, got a rebound. Matt Costello really had an interesting time on the court. Matt is improving it. He spent 8 minutes on the floor. He was 0 for 1 from the field, but he made 2 out of 3 free throws, had 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 3, count them, 3 blocks in 8 minutes, 2 on Cody Zeller that were just sensational and really excited the crowd. And I think Costello is proving his worth as a true freshman. Denzel Valentine was 2 out of 6 from the field. He had 7 rebounds. The kid can actually get up and rebound. 3 assists. One was actually magic-like as he hit, I think, Payne down low for a no-look pass. And I know Irvin had to comment, that's the kind of thing that I like to see. Denzel ended up playing 27 minutes, 7 rebounds, 6 points. And maybe the good news is that Travis Trice made some playing time, the first time in 5 games. He played 6 minutes, but he was 0 for 3 from the field, got 1 rebound, and had 1 assist. But that does show that he's getting back into the rotation, and that's obviously good news for the Spartans. Sellout crowd, let's see. The Hoosiers shot 44% from the field. Michigan State shot 42%. Three-point range, Indiana shot 44%. They made 8 three-point shots out of 18. The Spartans made 4 out of 15 for 26%. Free throws, Indiana, oddly enough, a really, really good shooting team. They only shot 66% free throws, 10 out of 15. And the Spartans were 16 out of 23, 69%. But boy, they missed some key shots down the stretch when it counted. Points in the paint, Indiana had 28 points. Michigan State had 36 points in the paint. Fast break points, Indiana had 12, and that was one thing that Judd told us yesterday. Look out for those transition baskets. They had 12 points on fast breaks. Michigan State had 8. The score was tied 5 times. The lead changed, believe it or not, 10 times. So if you're looking at 4-1, that's the kind of a line you expect, except you want the home team to be on the winning column, and they were not. So Michigan State is 22-5, 11-3 in the Big Ten. Indiana is now 24-3, 12-2, really in a leadership role now in the Big Ten race with 4 games to play. And after the game, let's see what Coach Izzo said Indiana deserved to win. Give them credit. Coming in here in this atmosphere, and it was electric again at Breslin, and they were able to play really focused throughout the game. They did not allow any distractions. Whereas I think Tom thought there were some distractions on the Michigan State players' side, especially in the first half. He thought the game was lost in the first half because we didn't come with the focus and the energy that was necessary. They did, of course, come back. They had a 4-point lead with a minute and a half to go, couldn't hold on. But he says, give Indiana credit. They played hard. They deserved to win. And the biggest shot of the game, a tip-in on a missed shot by Victor Oladipo. The guy is 6'5". He jumps out of the gym. He is an athlete. And he was obviously the player of the game. And according to Tom, that was the key play. I also believe that the Watford shot, off balance, falling away, bank shot that goes in and he gets fouled and they were 4 points down and he brought it back to a 1-point deficit for Indiana. Also a big play. But again, as Tom said, maybe the hype caught up with Michigan State in some regard, and just give them a lot of credit. They're not a one-man team. And let's go to Tom Crean. And he was very, very, of course, not apologetic. He was just crediting his club and saying how proud he was as a Michigan native. You know, Tom went to Central Michigan, and he was an assistant here at Michigan State. How big this game was and how proud he was of his team to come and play and beat a good Michigan State team and beat a good program like he did. And I think I heard this stat that the Indiana Sports Information Director said there were 4 1,000-point scorers on the floor at the same time for Indiana, first time in their school's history. So obviously this is a deep, experienced team that has developed over the last couple of years. And as Tom Crean said, some games don't live up to the hype. This one did. And he's absolutely right. He said, I told our guys before the game it would be the toughest game, toughest physical game they would ever play in, and it was. And we were able to fight through it and win it at the end, and he was proud of his bench, proud of the way they played. A great win against a great team. That, according to Tom Crean. Okay, that's as far as I want to talk about it, because it was a game held up a lot of times by timing situations and reviews on the monitor because of possibilities of flagrant fouls or technical fouls, one of which was called against Indiana. But I want to get to the phone right now if we've got Brandon on the line, and we do. Brandon Hines is on the line right now on Sports Talk AM, and I want to give you the phone number. It's 355-9527. If you want to call and ask a question of me or of Brandon, you can. But Brandon, welcome to the show representing the Izzone. Oh, I have to punch him in. Brandon, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Attaboy. Okay. Tell me exactly and tell the folks what your role is through the Student Alumni Foundation.
I'm one of the Izzone directors. There's four of us this year. Basically, we are responsible for creating the newsletters that we pass out to all the students before the games, passing out the newspapers and bags that we use at the beginning during introductions and on the first shot. We also keep track of all the members' attendance, and we have a point system for all the students for the upper and lower bowl seating situations.
How'd you get this job, Brandon? I want to stop you right there.
Well, actually, my brother was a director before me for 3 years, and he was interested. Well, him and I grew up around here, huge Michigan State basketball fan.
Where'd you go to high school?
Williamston High School.
Williamston, okay. And what year are you at State?
I'm a junior.
You're a junior, and your major?
Human biology.
Okay. All right. Now, how many members of the Izzone?
There's about 2,500.
2,500. These are season ticket holders?
Yep.
Okay. Do you ever sell any individual game tickets or any available?
Yes, actually. Games over winter and spring break are not included in the regular season ticket package.
Okay.
So, actually, I think just last night at midnight, tickets for Wisconsin and Northwestern over spring break went on sale to the students.
Okay. Have you ever, in your 3 years or your brother's four, seen the interest, enthusiasm, energy that you've seen in the last two home games, Michigan and Indiana?
I have not. The crowd, the Izzone and the rest of the Breslin Center, the whole place was phenomenal for both Michigan and Indiana.
When did the students start lining up to be first or, you know, whatever, in line for the Indiana game?
I was talking to the kids at the front of the line yesterday, and they said they had been there since 1 in the morning.
Wow. And that's on a cold, rainy, snowy, windy night, right?
Yes, very.
And apparently some really good-hearted people came to their rescue. Didn't make them warmer, but maybe it made them feel a little better. Talk about that a little bit.
A group of Spartan alumni, Spartan fans, pooled together a bunch of money and delivered subs and pizza and hot chocolate to the students waiting in line for the game. Some former Spartans, Spartan players, TJ Duckett, Kelvin Torbert, stopped by, brought some hot chocolate and pizzas. I think some current members of the football team also stopped by. So a lot of people stopped by to...
What time of the night do you think those stop-bys occurred?
I think it was happening actually throughout the day yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Starting, I think, around 11 or 12, and then people were ringing things throughout the day before the doors opened at 5:30.
I'll tell our radio listeners, there is a photo of TJ Duckett carrying a huge supply of pizzas to the Izzone waiting in line. He's smiling. But how great is that? And I'll just represent the athletic department for a minute and say here's your former athletes like Torbert from the basketball team and Duckett from football supporting the students that are waiting in line. I think that's a great gesture.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I heard a lot of positive comments from the students as they were coming in through the doors. My friends that were out waiting in line, everyone thought it was great and very nice of generous of everybody to take time out of their day, donate money, deliver food and drinks. Because, I mean, it's not always fun standing out there in line for hours
in
20-degree weather.
I know. And you have to be 18, 19, and 20 years old to be able to endure that. I did it myself, Brandon, when I was a student. I slept on the steps of Jenison to get tickets for the Michigan-Michigan State game down in Ann Arbor. But having said that, I just wonder if down the road you're considering any way that there's a system that could prevent the students from having to stay up all night in sub-freezing temperatures.
Yeah, there's. I mean, we haven't really talked too much about that stuff. Those talks will come when the season's over and we're not doing as much. But it would be obviously it would be very nice if we could have some sort of system where students don't have to stand outside in line for hours.
You know, Brandon, we can send a guy to the moon. I think we can figure this out.
I know
that this is a phenomenon, and I talked to your coordinator, advisor, Dan DiMaggio, and as he said, for the last 5 years, we haven't had this phenomenon. We haven't had students staying up all night getting in line to get into the Breslin. But now that you do, and maybe we hope this will happen in the future, then we can be prepared for it next season. Because, as I understand it, and this is the bad news, the Izzone is done. The last two home games, you are gone. It's spring break, right?
Yep, we will have a partial Izzone there. Like I said, tickets were on sale to students last night for those two games over break.
Oh, so those, the season tickets that the students bought do not include Northwestern and Wisconsin?
Correct.
Okay. Right.
But if students are going to be around during spring break and they'd like to come to the games, they can buy a lower bowl Izzone ticket.
So any student can?
Yes.
Okay, what about the general public? Is there a certain point where when the students do not pick them all up, then the public can buy the rest of them?
Yeah, but it's my understanding that if the students don't purchase the 1,400 lower bowl tickets by a certain date, I'm not sure what the date is.
I'd like to know that. I'll find out before Friday and put that on the air.
Yeah.
Because we want that house packed. Every game now is going to be so important, especially Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Yeah, Wisconsin's got a great basketball team this year. They're always a tough to get a victory over
them.
Sure.
Well, Brandon, we're talking with Brandon Hines from one of the coordinators for the Izzone here on National Public Radio. This is Sports Talk. 355-9527 is our phone number. I wanted to also give credit to the other folks. The Alumni Association of Michigan State also pitched in helping purchase some food and beverages last night, as I understand it. And they took up a collection, or somebody did, on the Red Cedar message board. And Coach Izzo's office himself, Tom, had his director of basketball operations deliver hot chocolate, I guess, to the kids?
Yeah, Kevin Palga came out, talked to the kids, delivered some hot chocolate to them. And he likes to get involved with the student crowd and make sure they're happy. When everyone in the Izzo's happy, then Michigan State basketball can do some great things. And that Breslin Center can get really loud
absolutely
the last couple of weeks.
There's no question. You guys create such an atmosphere of enthusiasm, and it's fun. I have to listen to some of the things that are said, and they're hilarious, they're funny, and they're loud, and they're great. And they got out the players. Although we were talking about this morning, Brandon, you were there, obviously, right?
Right.
Let's compare the crowd for the Michigan game to the crowd for the Indiana game. Enthusiasm, intensity, energy. Do you think they were equal, or was one a little better than the other?
I think Michigan may have been a little bit better just because that energy we sustained it throughout the game, being up by so much. Everyone was really excited about that, winning over your rival.
Yeah, I agree with you, and so does everybody else. There was just a little more intensity, as much on the players' part as it was on the Izzone and the fans, because it's your in-state arch rival.
Yep.
It's not like the moment Indiana hits the floor, there isn't that instant, I don't want to use the word hatred, but
it's
intense dislike, as Duffy Doherty used to say. It's not nice to hate anybody, but it's okay to intensely dislike Michigan.
Right.
Indiana doesn't bring quite the same response, let's put it that way. And you know, maybe that carried over to our players. I don't know. You know, it's impossible to know. We'll never know. But again, I thought the Izzone brought everything they could bring. I love the costumes, the creativity of the kids, the signs, the pictures, the cheering, and we hope it continues. Now, because you coordinate the Izzone, do you have anything connection with football coming in the fall?
Or I do not.
That's a separate issue.
Yep,
but it is a student organization that puts that together, the Front Row Fanatics or whatever they're called.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, will you be back for another season next year?
Yep. I'm looking to apply again to be director of the Izzone for another year. I love Michigan State basketball. Like I said, I grew up around here coming to.
And as I understand it, you also then next basketball season in the fall, you'll have the tent city set up outside on the Munn Field. And people have to stay up or do what? What do they do to get ready for the Izzone next year?
Yeah, at the beginning of every year in the fall, we have our Izzone camp out where coach and the team come by. The whole section camps out on Munn Field. Coach and the team stop by and talk and mingle with the students. It's just kind of a chance for everybody to gather in one place and get excited for the basketball
sure.
season to start.
You don't know the date of that yet, but that's usually, what, September when it's warmer weather?
Yeah, it's usually end of September, beginning of October.
Okay. Any final thoughts, any messages you want to pass along, Brandon, to the public that views the Izzone from the outside?
We just like to thank them for their support. I know people have been a little bit critical of us in the past couple of years, but we're trying to bring it back strong, and people have noticed and have given us a lot of compliments this year, and we really appreciate that.
Well, as the T-shirt says, you're on, and you are,
right.
and keep up the good work. And I really mean that from all the general public that views the Izzone. And best of luck next season, because I know this is your last go-around for this year. Maybe we'll see you at the Big Ten tournament or at the NCAA tournament. Who knows?
Hopefully.
All right, Brandon Hines. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, from the Izzone, one of the coordinators of the student group that just gives electricity to the Breslin Center. We're going to take a break right now. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
Another week, another announcement from a senator who won't be running again. This time it's Republican Mike Johanns from Nebraska who's had it with the Hill. And in Illinois, there's a seat to fill as Democratic Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. faces felony charges. I'm Celeste Headlee. Political junkie Ked Rudin returns next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Mostly cloudy today with scattered snow and a high in the low 20s. Tonight, a low of 7 and partly cloudy. Mostly sunny tomorrow, Thursday's high 25. And on Friday, snow is likely with a chance of light freezing drizzle too, the high 31. I'm Scott Pohl.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Terry Braverman, sitting in this week. Our phone number to call and ask a question or two, 355-9527. Or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Before we go to our next guest, I want to clear up something a lot of folks may not realize when they watch a basketball game like last night and there were stoppages of play and the officials are standing at the scoring table or looking at a monitor. One of the things that held us up for what seemed like an interminable period of time, and in fact, Tom Izzo finally said, do we have to wait an hour to get this figured out? At 21 seconds remaining in the game, Michigan State had the ball under their own basket at the baseline with, I think, 11 seconds to go on the shot clock. Play started. We threw it in. A certain period of time went by. The clock didn't run. And, of course, Tom Crean and the Indiana coaching staff came running over screaming, start the clock, what's wrong, what's going on? And finally, the officials call timeout. Now, X amount of time has gone by. We don't know how much time. So they have to go over to the monitor and look and watch the clock to see how long the possession was and how much time is remaining on the shot clock for Michigan State to get a shot off. But what you don't know is the clock is not started at the scoring table. the officials have a little box on their hip, on their belt, and they have a button they push to automatically start the game clock, and that starts the shot clock. So the officials themselves did not start the clock, not the folks on the scoring table. There is a backup where the scoring table person can start it if the officials don't, but in all that hectic confusion, the backup didn't kick in. He didn't see it, and so there was all that delay while we went back and they looked at the monitor and finally determined that something like 8 seconds had gone by. So there were 13 seconds to play and 3 point something seconds for Michigan State to get a shot off at that end. And it finally happened. It didn't, obviously we didn't get a shot off. Indiana gets it, goes down. They get the dunk by Oladipo and the game's over. But a lot of times people get blamed that aren't really the ones to blame. In this case, rather than blaming anybody, let's just say that inadvertently the officials did not start the clock and go from there. Because they said, what's going on? And then afterwards, Tom Crean, I will tell you this, Tom, God bless him, he came over and apologized to everybody at the scorer's table. He said, sorry, guys, heat of the battle, didn't mean it, please understand. And we did, because there is so much at stake, and the coaches are so much invested in their teams and in the game and the outcome. If a technological glitch occurs, they don't want that to affect the outcome, and it shouldn't. So bottom line is it ended probably the way it should have. And I say that in all respect to Michigan State and to Tom Izzo. I think last night, and if you are a basketball fan, you'd agree that probably the best team won. And that doesn't mean that the next time they play, another team might not win, and let's hope it's Michigan State, as the Spartans get ready to play at Ohio State on Sunday. I think it's 4 o'clock on CBS. And by the way, Michigan State women's basketball team plays tonight, 7 o'clock, Breslin Center, Northwestern. And another top five team also lost last night, if you didn't see it. Number five, Florida, was upset by Missouri, and they led by 13 points in the second half. Missouri came back to win, so numbers four and numbers five both were defeated last night. And Michigan State has good company in Florida, and of course the old arch rival from the national championship game. So anyway, that's enough basketball. I don't want to talk about it anymore, although we will talk in a way about basketball. Let's see if we can get a hold of our next guest is going to be on in a moment or two. We're going to give her a call because, is that what your note just told me? The game, the Indiana game, is being rebroadcast today at 4:30 on the Big Ten Network. That's good to know. So in about 3 hours, you will be able to watch. I know one guy who said his TiVo stopped with a minute and a half to play, and he works right here at WKAR. So, Scott, wherever you are, go. You can watch at 4:30. So about 6 o'clock tonight, you can see the last 5 minutes of the Michigan State-Indiana game on the Big Ten Network. And speaking of the Big Ten Network, if we can get Lisa here, that's where she is now. Lisa Byington began her career, well, her career advanced through the city of Lansing, Michigan. She worked for Channel 6 for about 7 years, I want to say, and now has moved up to broadcasting for the Big Ten Network. And I thought it would be interesting to talk with Lisa a little bit about women and their role in sports broadcasting now. She had a conference call at 1 and was going to join us, so let's see if we can get a hold of her. Are we doing that now? Okay. Lisa, I guess you're on the line. I have to punch you in. You know, this is high-tech stuff for me. Lisa Byington, how are you?
Terry, you sound like my old boss, Fred Heumann, who is very technologically challenged and couldn't even turn on his cell phone.
Please.
So I can only imagine what it's like for you there.
Am I being compared to old Uncle Fred?
Only in this way.
You know what he said to me?
I had to tell him where his vibrate button was on his cell phone. I mean, because, you know, we'd be at a press conference and his cell phone goes off every press conference, and he squeezes it really tight because he thinks that'll muffle the sound. I said, Fred, there's a button on the side. It turns it to vibrate. And actually, it always, you know, turns it off.
Doesn't that work, squeezing it? I do the same thing. Doesn't that work? Squeezing it. I do it with my remote. If it doesn't work,
like
I squeeze it harder.
Person.
No, you know what he told me? I told him you were going to be on, and Fred Heumann said, "I did not hire her, but I trained her." He said,
"Well,
tell her I
said that." Let's not get carried away.
That's what he said.
No, actually, yeah, Dave Ackerley was the sports director when I came in. In 2002, at Channel 6, he was the sports director, so Dave Ackerley hired me.
Where was your first job in broadcasting?
It was up in Alpena, Michigan, and I like to tell people that, it's the second smallest market in the country, and if people don't understand what that means, I mean, market sizes are almost based on kind of population.
Yeah.
So, you know, Alpena is like two market sizes right above Glendive, Montana, and I know that for a fact because I looked it up.
I know it's on your website. I looked at your bio.
Oh, okay.
I had never heard of Glendive, Montana.
Yeah. And so, my joke is that, I hit scan on the radio dial when I was going up for my interview, and it went all the way around without stopping, and it was on FM. And Alpena was nice. As all of our first jobs probably are, is that, you walk away with plenty of stories, and you get to do a little bit of everything.
My first job was in Traverse City, Michigan, the Paul Bunyan Network.
Okay. That's what they called it, huh? The Paul Bunyan Network?
PBN. Paul, it was like BTN, but it was Paul Bunyan Network. Well, it was radio and television, WTCM radio, and Channel 7 Traverse City, and after 4 months of sweeping the floors and doing the booth announcing, the station manager came in and said, "I got a picture of you in the mail today." I said, "Of me?" He said, "Yeah." And he throws an 8x10 glossy. Are you ready, Lisa?
Ready.
Of Bozo the Clown. And I said, "Who's
that?" You were Bozo the Clown, weren't
you? I said, "Who is that?" And he said, "That's you if you don't want to sweep the floors and load the Three Stooges films and Popeye." And so I said, I did theater in college. I did children's theater in college and a little acting. And so he said, "You can do this. We'll put you in a costume. We'll measure you. And for an hour, you'll do the show. And then you can do the sports at 11 o'clock. But you do the kids show at 5:30. Yeah, that was my start. Channel 7 doing Bozo. And as a fundraiser, you never want to tell anybody that you were Bozo the Clown. It just doesn't have the credibility factor.
Right.
But now that I'm retired, I can tell everybody.
Huh?
Right.
I said, then they'll just figure it out after they get to know you, and you don't have to tell them that.
Hey, Lisa, let's go back to your background. And where did you go to high school?
I went to Portage Northern.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get that confused with Portage Central,
yeah,
which is my direct rival. That would be like confusing Michigan State with Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I joke that, Portage Northern has the school colors of brown and orange.
Mm.
And so I went from high school, where my school colors are brown and orange, to college, where I went to Northwestern University, where the colors were purple and white. And so I just had a hideous closet,
I know, and you played soccer.
Based on those school colors.
Oh, I know. You played soccer and basketball in college. What about high school? What did you do? Same thing?
Basketball and soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And, I loved playing softball. Fred would probably fall off his chair because I joke with him about how I hate baseball. But I did play softball, and it was all the way up until eighth grade. And then softball and soccer were going on during the same year here in the state of Michigan. So I had to make a choice when I got to high school.
Mm.
But, I played both. I was recruited to play basketball at Northwestern. So I played 4 years there, and then 2 years I walked on. So my final 2 years, I played soccer.
Did you play basketball for the same coach as Joanne McCauley?
I believe, yeah. Don Pirelli.
Pirelli, yeah. That wasn't her. Obviously, her maiden name was something. It was another name I cannot recall.
Well, no. The coach was Don Pirelli. She was Joanne Palumbo.
That's it, Palumbo.
When she was at Northwestern. But she was a little bit before me.
Yeah, I know that. I'm not putting you in that category.
I want to clarify that.
Yeah. Now, Lisa.
We were teammates.
Lisa is at, you're not in Chicago, but you're with the Big Ten Network. So how often do you have to go to Chicago?
It depends. It just kind of depends on the job. If I'm doing any studio work and that sort of thing. So, a lot of people, I think, have a misconception. You work for the Big Ten Network, well, you got to live in Chicago. And that's not necessarily true because, a lot of what I do are games.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm going to Minnesota or Penn State or Illinois to do the job. And frankly, for the Big Ten Network, I mean, I would say 80%, 80 to 90% of the people who work there that you see involved with the games and stuff are freelance, just like me. Mm-hmm. And they'll live in Pittsburgh and they'll live in Indianapolis. And
so technically you're not an employee of the Big Ten?
I'm a freelancer.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
And so really a lot of people don't realize this either. The only on-air talent, if I have this right, I hope I do, that are
Dave Revson or somebody?
Dave Revson and Rick Pizzo and Mike Hall are the only on-air. They have some production people and salespeople who are obviously full-time and that sort of thing. But those are the only three that are on-air, in my understanding, that are full-time over there. Everybody else is freelance.
But, Lisa, the good news is you have, it's in a sense, graduated from sideline reporter, although you still do that, to play-by-play.
That's correct.
That's a huge jump. And that's, to me, that's an ultimate wow. How about for you?
You know, it's funny because I've actually done, I think, almost every on-air job that you could probably do with them. I mean, I actually have done a couple of analysis stuff for basketball even this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I even freelance a little bit with CBS Sports Network now this year. And so, yeah, I've been reporter, I've been play-by-play, I've been analyst, I've been studio host. I've even produced a feature for them, so I'm like their, I guess, utility player.
I love
but
what's your ultimate
fun.
Goal, by the way? Ultimate. Is ESPN, is that the ultimate now?
You know, if you asked me probably like 10 years ago, unequivocally, it would be yes, because I think ESPN is the standard. But, you know, kind of like we're realigning conferences, you know, the cable world is kind of realigning itself as well.
Of course.
And though ESPN still has a monopoly on a lot of things, you know, there are so many cable outlets and so many different places you can work and so many different things you can do.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if that's an ultimate goal anymore. I mean, frankly, I feel very challenged right now in what I'm doing and very satisfied right now in what I'm doing. And it's been a while when I've been in broadcasting, I really felt that way. Like, I mean, I'm excited to do the games that I'm doing and to do the work that I'm doing day in and day out.
Thank God you came along when you did, Lisa. If you had graduated high school in 1956, you'd be retired and selling life insurance right now.
Right.
You know, cable and all that stuff has really made it a new experience for female broadcasters. Now, which gets me to my next question. When do you think we're ever going to see a woman do play-by-play of men's basketball?
Well, right now.
Who?
I think Beth Mullins and maybe Pam. I thought Pam Ward had
Pam Ward's doing football.
Right. I thought that they had done a couple of men's games. I might be wrong on that.
But I don't know that.
I mean, to me, actually, football is the bigger barrier to break down than basketball would be. And the fact that they're doing, you know, Pam Ward is not doing football anymore this year, but Beth Mullins still is. Mm. And the fact that they've opened the door there for women to even.
Why not? They're officiating. They officiated in the NFL last year.
Right. Right.
It's. Why not? It's exactly what the way I feel, because play-by-play is play-by-play. Now,
yeah,
analysts, maybe not. Maybe the ex-player is always going to be the color announcer, but...
Well, I think that makes the most sense. Yeah. I mean, that's their job, you know, to break down the play and tell you really what's happening. And so I think it's hard if you haven't played the sport to be in that role. But, you know, as a play-by-play, as you know, you have to know the sport, but it's kind of a traffic cop, and you kind of work your way in and out of breaks, and you work your way in and out of plays, and you try to involve the analyst a little bit. So, yeah, why not?
Sure.
Why not throw, you know, it shouldn't matter, in my opinion, what the gender is, but if they're qualified. I think Beth Mullins is more than qualified.
Lisa Byington, you went to probably one of the best broadcast journalism schools in the country, in Northwestern, and obviously you did that by design. So did you know before you entered that was what you were going to pursue?
I thought it was, yeah, and you're right that it's one of the reasons why I chose Northwestern. You know, my dad was, he ended his career as a middle school counselor, but he really began his career as a teacher, and he worked his way into being a journalist. I mean, he was actually a columnist in Battle Creek, he had a column, and it was called, his first name is Bob, so the column was called Bob's Beat. And back when they were using typewriters, I remember growing up, and I remember sitting at the table with my dad and watching him type out stories on his typewriter from, like, a high school game that he went to. And he eventually got out of it because I think he wanted to work more with kids. Hmm. But, you know,
so Bob Byington.
Bob Byington, yeah.
Wasn't Bylines by Bob or some silly name like that?
It was Bob's Beat.
Bob's Beat. I want to see Bob's Bylines or Byington's Bylines.
You don't like Bob's Beat?
No, no. And let me tell you, since we're talking old-time broadcasting and your dad, I'm probably older than your dad, but my second job in, I went to Hastings, Nebraska, and one my first job there, besides doing sports everywhere, in the morning, I had to be at the radio station at 7 a.m. to rip the wire. People don't even know what the wire is anymore. You know, the Associated Press stories that came off. And I had to type up the national, the world news, the state news, and the local news, sports, and weather, all onto one 8x10 sheet of mimeographed paper. And if you made a mistake, a typo, you had to pull it out and do it again because you couldn't. There was no spell check thing deal.
Right.
And so
right.
I typed it up, then ran it through a mimeograph machine, about 100 copies, then get in my car and go to the 7 or 8 truck stops around Hastings, Nebraska, and deliver 20, what were they called, KHAS newsgrams on bright yellow paper to each of the truck stops. So the truckers who came in could just get all the news they wanted on one sheet of paper, you know, and they're on their way again. Meanwhile, the last stop, I got to eat my steak and eggs and coffee and have breakfast. By 8:30, I'm done. 8:30 in the morning, I'm done.
That's great.
But you do whatever you have to do, right? I'm sure you had some strange. How about in Alpena?
In Alpena, they didn't have a live truck. They didn't even have computers in the newsroom. And I'm talking about the year 2000.
Whoa.
When this is happening. So for our scripts, we actually typed out our scripts kind of on a carbon sort of paper. Mm-hmm. And then we had an Alpena high school student come in, and he was our teleprompter guy. And he would take and he would rip off a copy for, like, the director, and he would rip off a copy for the talent, and he'd rip off a copy for the teleprompter, and he would tape with Scotch tape each sheet of paper, so it would make like one long strip of scripts. And then they had like a magnifying glass that kind of hung down on this little machine, and it had one little wire that connected to a tiny little TV screen that sat underneath the camera.
Yes.
And then he would pull the paper, and that would be the prompter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the camera or the magnifying glass would, you know, transport somehow an image to that TV, and that was our teleprompter in Alpena.
Of course.
It was in the year, and I know that people say, you know, when I started 60s or 70s and stuff, but this was the year 2000. I mean, that's how behind the times.
But that's what prepares you and what makes you so good today, because, oh, this is a piece of cake compared to what I had. Oh,
well,
I get to do this, and I get all this in front of me, right?
Right. You know, I go out and, you know, if I do a feature, I suddenly don't have to shoot it with a camera. You know, I always liked editing, but, you know, they have editors now, and I will sit in with an editor and say, you know, I want this, this, and that. But, you know, that's one of the pluses right now, and what I do is that the grunt work is gone.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't realize that. They think you're in TV and you have a staff of like 50 people to work with you. And, you know, I mean, Fred Heumann, I give him credit. He's a sports director, and he still takes out a camera and goes out and shoots highlights, and they all come back, and they edit them themselves, and they write the scripts, and then they change into their suits and then put on their own makeup. We don't have makeup people or hair people, you know, at the local news level.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it makes you appreciate, because I've worked my way up, it makes you appreciate now what you have.
So to young people, women that would like to aspire to have a job like yours, what's your advice to them? Where do they go?
You know, I tell people, it's not unusual now to, I think people still want to say, oh, it's unusual to have women in sports. Well, it's not anymore. You know, maybe like in the 80s it was, but I mean, there's plenty of women. You'll see probably a woman on almost every broadcast now in varying capacities.
Do they have to have played sports necessarily?
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, what I tell women is now that the door has been opened, like make sure that you're credible now that you walk into the room.
Yeah.
You know, like, it still amazes me how many interns that I come across or job shadows who don't even just feel comfortable having a conversation just using sports lingo, like, you know, 3-point field goal percentage and, you know, in the red zone, stuff like that. I mean, that it's just
terminology. Use it. Yeah.
That, yeah. And if you're uncomfortable with that because maybe you didn't play the sport, then watch it and watch the games and watch SportsCenter or watch the finale on the Big Ten Network or watch, you know, some of those shows where they're highlight shows and they use the lingo. And so you can understand the sport a little bit more and try to, you know, talk to the coaches.
Lisa, what's the most unusual? What's the most unusual practice you ever had? What, when you tried to get better and let's say do play by play, how did you practice? What did you do? Where'd you go?
You know, I just kind of would watch games and in my head, you know, because I didn't want to scare people.
Did you ever tape them?
You know, I didn't. I didn't. And, you know, the first game that I did play by play, and this might sound silly, but I had watched so many basketball games, either playing or just watching as a media person or whatever, that I forgot to talk about the obvious stuff. So, you know, the first game I'm doing the game and I'm sitting there and I didn't talk a whole lot and I had to remind myself, wait, that's my job. You know, like I have to say they have their third foul. I have to say who's coming in.
But television doesn't have to say as much as radio.
That's true. But
because people can see certain things.
Yeah, people can see and you don't have to be as obvious. But it took me just kind of a jolt to realize that, you know, I'm not just watching the game anymore. It's the way it sounds. You know, you got
to you walked to was it Wisconsin, Illinois a couple nights ago? Women's game?
Yeah, Monday night. Yeah.
Okay, what's your next game to work?
I'm actually reporting at a hockey game Friday, and then I do women's basketball Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Wait, Saturday, so, you do three games in a row?
I do.
In what role? What capacity?
Play-by-play for Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
You're doing three games in 3 nights?
Yes.
Whoa. That's hard on the old vocal cords. Young vocal cords.
I drink a lot of hot tea.
Do you? Gee, that's my problem. I can see now.
I wanted to ask you, why don't you have it's a beautiful day for football. Why don't you do something for basketball?
Well, we've been working on that. And it's not a beautiful night for basketball. It's indoors. It's a weather report. So football lends itself to that. Now, if you were listening very carefully for the Michigan game, they did allow me to say it's because they had a sponsor. Farm Bureau Insurance said it's 75 degrees and warm in the Breslin Center. It's a beautiful day a beautiful night for basketball. And I said,
so
really? We're going to do this? And the guys in marketing said, yeah, it's a one time only. So we did it. But we're looking for a better catchphrase. We're looking for something else. So if you can come up with one for men's basketball, please be my guest.
Are there royalties involved?
No. Are you kidding? I am volunteering on public radio and you want royalties.
Right.
Hey, by the way, I have to ask you this. In officiating, they don't allow a referee to work a game of a school that he graduated from, if I understand that correctly. In broadcasting, have you done games for Northwestern or a game that Northwestern was in?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, you can't get around it.
Okay.
I mean, how many games has Kirk Herbstreit done for Ohio State?
That's true. By the way, your buddy, Sean Morris, is one of my favorite guys. He's a Northwestern grad and working on the Big Ten. Do you ever cross paths?
Oh, yeah. I'll see him in studio.
Shawnee is terrific.
He's got some great one-liners.
Oh, isn't he funny? He's the funniest guy alive. I love him.
Yeah.
But going back to tonight, Northwestern women play at Breslin. Are you Are you going to the game? Are you working the game?
Probably not. I am not working the game. It's not on TV. But I got some other things I got to do tonight. But I'll definitely keep an eye on it because Northwestern's actually one of the teams I am broadcasting this weekend. So I'll keep an eye on the game and see how that goes. But you know, I mean, Susie Merchant's done a great job this year. Just talking about Michigan State and the injuries that they have, and
you know, it really tragic. Helped to get two players yeah. back in December. Yeah. But, you know, to get to that point where she was playing, yeah. like, basically seven players, mm-hmm. it's amazing what her and her staff have been able to do.
Is there any way anybody can catch Penn State?
You know, they have a decently challenged schedule remaining. You know, they have one loss, and they're certainly it's their title to lose. And I would, if I were to put money, I would definitely put it on them. But, you know, they have to go to Nebraska at the end of the year to end the regular season. Mm-hmm. I know they play Illinois again, and Illinois is one of the hotter teams right now. And I think they go to Minnesota, if I remember right. So, you know, they lost their only loss. It's so funny how sports are, but their only loss was to Wisconsin, which is sits in the bottom of the standings.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
They lost by 2 points, and it's exactly why you play the game. So I had to look at that final like twice to see that Penn State really lose to Wisconsin.
How many
so,
women's teams in the Big Ten will make the NCAA tournament?
I would say maybe five right now.
Does that include Michigan State?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It includes Michigan and Michigan State.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I don't know, five or six. I mean, they made history last year getting seven in.
Now, the Big Ten Network can't go any farther than the regular season, can they? They can't go
to the... That's correct. Yeah, ESPN, the family, I should say, of all the ESPN networks, air the entire women's basketball tournament.
Do you have a shot for this year? For any games?
I don't this year, but I'm working on it in future years, so we'll see.
Okay. All right, yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Lisa, and this is a very naive question. Do you have anybody representing you, or are you your own agent?
You know, no, that's a good question. I actually did use an agent many years ago, and, you know, for several reasons. You know, sometimes an agent, because the agent is kind of the bad guy, I like to say, because he or she's kind of negotiating the money for you and is looking for more opportunities for you. So if there are executives or management that, you know, that they rub shoulders with and it's not great chemistry, you know, you got to be aware of that. Mm. And I just felt like there was not enough forward movement, so to speak, mm-hmm. with the person I was using. So I represent myself.
So you're on your own.
I'm on my own and have gotten more work because of that. And now I'm working with CBS Sports Network as well. So I pay myself my 10%. How's that?
Of course. Keep it in the family. I should go back to royalties again. I have to tell you this. You know, when she was at Channel 6, I have to thank you. You sent a camera person down to Detroit for my first a public address job with the Detroit Lions at Ford Field. The very first night, it was an exhibition game, and you had a cameraman there, and you did about a 30-second real quick blurb on the air. A local guy is doing the PA, and that was kind of fun. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I think it was Fred Heumann who even just assigned me to that. But it's
well, Fred's son is my spotter. That may be the whole connection.
He just wanted his son on TV is what he wanted.
Rob's a very good guy, unlike his dad. But
yeah,
at least
I remember that. But, you know, and that's one thing that, just bringing up Fred, I think it's one thing that he does really well and that he'll make an extra effort to find that local story, you know, whether it's in Detroit and bringing it back to Lansing or whether it's up north or, you know.
Yeah, we do kid him a lot, but yeah. I guess we shouldn't do that, but I'm looking at Lisa Byington's bio, and here's a shot of her with Tom Izzo right in the middle. Lisa, you look great on the bio. You look great on the air, and thank you so much for spending this time with us, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Lisa
I'll
Byington.
I'll think of that catchphrase for you.
Oh, please. All right. Are we about to wrap it up, Aaron? We thank you so much. This is Terry Braverman on Sports Talk Radio, AA 70 AM. I'll be back tomorrow at 1. See you, everybody.
NPR News.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.